I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We are back for episode 135 of Digital Divination.
Hey, you know what? I'm Ron Lundeen, and the opinions I express here are I'm an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
Oh, man, we so missed that last time, Ron.
I missed that. All right. I'm out of practice because I missed last time.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yes, exactly.
You need to say this in the mirror every Sunday, regardless of whether or not we're recording.
I'm afraid if I say it three times in the mirror, then Gary Gygax will come forward or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Well, we, as promised last time, now that Ron's back. Ron, did you listen to our show last time?
I only listened to the first part of it, and then I arrived at my destination and intended to listen to the rest later and didn't get a chance to. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, we said that because Ron wasn't here, we would put off talking about the Galaxy Guide till this time, because this way Ron would have a chance to review it and read it and talk about it.
This very Galaxy Guide?
Okay. That very Galaxy Guide.
There's a whole galaxy of stuff in here.
There is, and we're going to talk about it today. Where should we start?
Yeah. Where to start, indeed. Like, there's... let's talk about, like, what this kind of is. I don't think you should think about this as, like, a Pact Worlds type or Near Space type of book. It doesn't go into detail on everything, obviously, in the galaxy, because that would be too big of a book, or everything in, like, a section of a thing. This is more just sort of a Whitman sampler of stuff about Starfinder. A delicious box of chocolates. And even though you never know what you're going to get, you know what you're going to get in here. And that is a little bit of like history of what's going on and where we are when 2E starts. You know, yeah. It talks a little bit about the newborn and why Zon Kuthon and Shellen are now Zon Shellen and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And a brief history of the Pact Worlds and the history of the galaxy before all that happens, right? Before today. And then it goes into types of campaigns that you might play in Starfinder Second Edition, which just goes into like dystopian, fantasy, horror, all the sort of sci-fi goodness. And with like those, that's where you're going to get like kind of detailed looks at specific places. The fantasy one talks a little bit about Triaxis, because that place has dragons. The weird campaigns talks a lot about Barathuda and Leovara, because Barathus are weird.
Yes.
And then it has a whole bunch of background sort of chunked into sections that are related to each of those sort of genres, so you can sort of take those backgrounds and pop them in with the normal backgrounds you get in Starfinder Player Core if you're playing an Into the Unknown campaign. What is it then? Then there's factions, right? Which talks a little bit about some organizations that are big, like Abadar Core and Starfinder Society. Each of those factions gets an archetype, and then it has six ancestries. Did I get all that right? I think that's everything.
Plus
a map.
Yes.
Oh,
the map is amazing. Map. I was very excited to see such a comprehensive map of so many new and familiar places. It was a real delight to see sort of the galaxy laid out like that, or the chunk of it out like this.
Yeah. It's done in a pretty cool hex way.
Yeah. In part of our thing here, when I edit, we'll try to show the map right now.
Okay.
So that people can see it.
You gotta like when it's on the page in the book, it's a little difficult to see. It's a little small print, but it comes with a big poster, which you fold that out, and then you get all the good, glorious details without having to get a magnifying glass out.
Well, and the neat thing about the map is it shows two things. It shows the Pack Worlds, which is the solar system for Starfinder, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Then it shows Desna's Path, which is a spiral galaxy that is the Starfinder galaxy.
Right. That is the sort of setting, right?
Yes, the setting of it.
Dog in the background.
Yeah. And the neat thing, what I love about Desna's Path is when you go through various adventure paths, you go through all the various society scenarios, they say they take place in near space, pack worlds, in the vast,
right?
Some system. Well, now this map, Desna's Path, shows all the systems relative to each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that is super awesome.
That is great.
I mean, instead of saying like where on Galarian does this place, whether you can say where in Desna's Path or just where in the galaxy, but where in Desna's Path has a little more flavor to it.
Right.
Yeah. I think so.
I don't want to skim past as far as the organization goes, the genius of having the different locations in the Pack World, the different planets of the Pack Worlds, broken up not by kind of what they are. Here's the order of them, sort of. Yeah. Here's the dull order from the sun outward, but to break them up, Jason, as you were saying, by campaign types. It's important to say, okay, you want to run a dystopian campaign, that's where Versys shows up, right? That's where it shows up as a potential campaign. Oh, you want to run a horror campaign, that's where Eox shows up. I feel like that is a much more direct way of getting to what are these differences in these worlds about, rather than, oh, well, Versys is the one that has some dystopian elements, or Eox is the one where it's filled with undead, so it has some horror elements. No, as soon as you're grounding things in horror, and Eox is an example of that, and it's not the only one, that's saying a lot about what that particular world in the Pact Worlds can deliver for you as a game master or as a player in a campaign. And I think that's actually really clever. The more I saw the different types of campaigns unfolding to include all the different Pact Worlds, I thought that was a really masterful way of organizing this book.
Do we get every one of them in there? I'm not quite. Yeah, I only kind of flip through it, but yeah,
I think that Idari is moved into the Ports of Call.
Oh, there's a Ports of Call section. That's what I forgot to mention. Yeah.
Which is
a little bit of Absalom Station, Idari, so other sort of like places where anything can kind of happen. They don't
any kind of
neatly fit
because technically Absalom Station is a Ports of Call, but the ghost levels within Absalom Station are part of the weird campaigns, which is right there telling you how you can have sort of how you can have a whole genre of a campaign within another location in the Pact Worlds. Very smartly done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. Yeah,
the other thing I appreciate in you start with the maps and then you all jump down to all the adventures. Sandwiched between that is kind of like the timeline for the galaxy, right? And it kind of reviews real briefly what happened in Starfinder, which goes from the Gap till 317 after Gap, which is when basically Starfinder 1 started.
Yeah.
And now it brings all the way to 325. And I like these numbers because now I realize I never thought about this with 317 before.
You didn't know that?
No, I never thought like that. But that's when Starfinder was released, and 325 is when 25 is when second edition is released.
It makes it easy for when you're planning like adventure paths and saying like when they begin, you always just know it's through. I mean, Pathfinder does the same thing. It's just that the number is higher.
Yeah, hadn't occurred to me.
Or lower, depending on how you consider the Absalom Reckoning versus years after the Gap earlier.
Well, that's temporally. Numbers-wise, they are lower numbers.
Correct.
Like you don't know, it's not the math isn't different. Unless you think about math a different way, the number 300 is lower than the number 72.
You are technically correct, and everyone knows that is the best kind of correct.
The best kind of correct. But now, technically, way after, of course.
Yeah. But what's interesting about this timeline is they in the intervening years, right from 317 to now, they kind of highlight all the high notes from the various adventure paths that affected kind of the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah, oh, that's a good point. Now I'm looking.
Them in there.
I didn't look at that. Drift Crisis and 321.
Yeah, but that's a big one. We had that one had to be in there, right? Because that one was a meta event, essentially. Right?
You know, it starts with the Scoured Stars incident, which was the kickoff for
Starfinder Society. Season one. Yep.
Right, right. And what's interesting, then, if you go back and look at all the things in the text that it talks about what's happened, they bring up all, they kind of explain, the birth of the child, the whole thing with Zan Kuthan and things like that, things that kind of happened in various campaigns. They also highlight changes in different places.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That foreshadow, I imagine, coming adventure paths.
Maybe. I mean,
that could be
the point of these. Always the point of these types of books.
Yes.
When you're not writing mechanical stuff, is to plant seeds for anything, right. Like anyone's any home adventures. Someone else can come down here like 5 years later, and the team is completely different. Pick up a sentence here and be like, oh, that sounds like that would be a fun adventure path. Not necessarily, you don't have to plan it all out in advance. You just have to just chuck seeds onto the ground and hope some of them sprout into something.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so all that precedes them starting then just talking about adventures, kind of as Jason alluded, with the going with the various places. So the first one's dystopian adventures. Talking about how to start a campaign, giving adventure hooks. And each of them has an encounter mode, exploration mode, and downtime mode for what you could do with a campaign and that sort of adventure in that setting, and giving you various planets where you can set these things in, pointing out important NPCs, important locations, talking about the culture. This is, this is a wonderful campaign book. Is the way I see this, where if you are like, I'm working on my own adventure path right now. I'm designing for myself to do for fun, setting it in a certain kind of setting and going through a campaign book for another system. And it's like, if I were to do that for Starfinder second edition, this is all laid out right here as well. You have places you can hang on to and expand from for whatever type of campaign you want to do, either formally as the company, right, doing an adventure path, or as somebody doing a homebrew.
Yeah, it's interesting to point out that this is a book that you'd go back to over and over, because it's not a campaign book for a single campaign. If you were going to take this book and say, I'm going to make a campaign out of this the information that's provided here, you would only use a small portion of the book. Other portions of the book would be available for later campaigns or for other developments or a mid-campaign shift in tone or something like that.
Part of it's just the sheer scope of having an entire galaxy, right? Yeah. And the variance you can have from system to system and planet to planet. If you were to do it in, for Pathfinder, well, you have a planet and you have countries, you have continents. This is like that on steroids, in terms of the variety of campaigns you can run.
Got to blow it up.
Yeah.
And got to blow it up.
And conceptually different. I was, before we leave the history at the beginning, one thing that I found interesting when it was talking about Octurn, which is a favorite planet of mine that is now all blowed up. I think that they give the history very well of Karsai the King and the midwives and the birth of the newborn. Yeah. I don't think they use the word Nyarlathotep at all.
No, I noticed that was very interesting that they avoid saying Nyarlathotep. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of wonder why. Maybe they want to get away from that specific cosmic horror character, or maybe they want, they obviously it is still the same elder, the same eldritch deity, right? Because they just refer to it kind of obliquely as a worshiper of a, How do they say?
God of conspiracies and forbidden magic.
That's exactly right. That's who that is. It's Nyarlathotep, but it's not ever mentioned by name here. And I wonder, because that was one of the core 20 deities of first edition Starfinder, its omission really struck me.
That's fair. Well, maybe we'll find out why.
It's because spell check kept rejecting different ways to spell it. It just would never, you never really know how to spell that name.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that there's so much focus in this around the newborn and the fact that we had literally in our Intrepid Heroes actual play just concluded the cosmic birthday, which kind of this whole thing, the history here kind of details kind of what we experienced on a low level on Absalon Station. And it actually talks about those sorts of events that we ran into in this. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool.
Well, yeah. In fact, I don't want to give spoilers for a cosmic birthday, but if you played a cosmic birthday and then read this book, like I did, you're like, oh, I remember when that happened. Or, oh, I know those guys, right? Oh, I met those NPCs. Yeah. It's, it was really fun.
Yeah. So I thought that was very cool. And, but it's surprising that the newborn plays such a big role, that this seems like a very central thing to Starfinder Second Edition. Like it's going to have major repercussions throughout.
Well, sure, yeah.
It's their death of Aridin, right? Which becomes a thing in, or I guess maybe more specifically in Pathfinder Second Edition, it's sort of a death of Gorum, right? It is an event that has so many world-shaping implications that they can give you kind of a rundown, and they do, of how many different planets have changed.
Right.
But then they leave the door open to later tag any change that they want to make to be, oh, it's because the newborn's effect, right? And that's actually pretty clever world-building on their part, because not only can the people at Paizo tell different stories because of that, but people who are using it as a game master to create your own world can shake things up by saying, why did this happen? Well, you know, it happened when Aridin died. Shrug, it happened when Gorum died, right? Shrug, it happened when the newborn was born.
Yeah.
Very cool. Now, in terms of the adventures, like the different types of adventures that they talk about, do you have any in particular that you're pretty excited about or that you like?
I mean, I had to read the horror section first, basically.
Oh, I think Ron might have said that too. I don't know.
No, I actually, I didn't get as far as the horror section when I was flipping through the high tech, and I saw the title of Empty Wall, which is one of the world shards of Arshalin. This is a planet that had some alien spacecraft above it, or alien space station, a huge one, and the space station broke apart and all of its pieces rained down on the planet to be like jagged shards of metal on the sort of swamp planet. And one of my very first, if not my very first, Starfinder writing assignments were the snake, multi-headed snake people who live there. And so I came up with Empty Wall, and I came up with the Lithosaurians and how they have like multiple limbs and redundant organs inside, and how sort of how interesting that might be, and how they deal with the fact that there's sort of this technological component on their swamp world, and how that sort of supercharged their own technological advancement. And it was fun to write, but even more fun to see it as I was flipping through this book. I'm like, Empty Wall, did I write that? Oh, that is Empty Wall that I know.
Familiar.
And all these, it's since been expanded. And I really, you know, hats off to whoever wrote this section to expand all of that, to make it even more interesting. And weirdly, to put it in the high-tech section of the campaign, because it's not a place where the technology level has always been really high and you're telling stories like that. It is a place where it was like a swamp planet that was sort of forced to push up into the high-tech. And what might that mean? That tells a very different story, and I really liked seeing it there.
Yeah.
Cool. What about the horror parts that you narrowed in on?
I mean, obviously, you know, as Ron noted, there's Eox, which is going to, you know, have a bunch of good stuff in it. But I thought it was interesting that the horror section included some Callistocrat world. What are they called?
Oh, yeah.
Mausoleum ships.
Yeah.
And lots of different types of ways their process can go wrong. Well, like I said, they have the two processes now, putting their consciousness in a virtual machine or turning themselves into a silicon mummy. That's fun. I definitely and enjoying that, thinking a little bit also too about like the, even though I never played it, the Five Fear Die.
Oh yeah.
Kind of like Callistocrat ship where you've got to disguise yourself as Callistocrat. Mm-hmm. But that not being horror, that being a kind of a heist. So it's like an interesting kind of, but that though that necessarily probably isn't a mausoleum shit. That was just a Callistocrat.
Right.
Fancy vessel. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, Riven Shroud is something I never really like thought about too much before. So it was interesting mm-hmm. to see more of it here and to maybe, you know, get some ideas from it.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm like Ron in a couple of ways. One is I really was excited to see the high tech adventure section because it includes something that I wrote as well.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. In that it was announced just this week that Starfinder Society, the season is going to kick off with this discussion about the first ones, and in particular, this very first thing they talk about, the Wreck of the Returned. And it was announced, and I can finally say that I wrote Starfinder Society Special 1-00, which kicks off second edition, and it's called Collision's Wake, where it talks about this initial exploration of this first one's vessel that crashes in on Akaton. So
I get a sense that that's going to be a really big thing. Like a lot is going to build off of that look back in a few years and remember when it kind of started with Collision's Wake is my sense.
Well, I kind of have a mixed things about it because they announced four adventures and the first Starfinder Society 1-01, right, which is the first formal Starfinder Society one that's not a special, kind of gets into the whole beginning of this here. Collision's Wake is more of a special that kind of highlights maybe a broader picture of what's going to happen across the whole campaign for the kickoff for second edition. But it doesn't reveal a lot of secrets. It's mostly foreshadowing, I think.
Okay. Well, you gotta set the table.
The table.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that's happening with Starfinder Society is we're going from 4 to 5 hour scenarios to 2.5 to 3 hour scenarios. So most of the scenarios are shorter. This special happens to be a double size special. Well, that just means it's 4 to 5 hours like a standard special before.
Yeah, I got it.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I got to say, when I heard that they were going to be shorter, I'm like, because I had the joy of playtesting your adventure, John, you may recall. Yes. And I'm like,
yes, I remember
John's adventure was not 2.5 to 3 hours. It was longer than, it was packed full of cool stuff. It was longer than that. How are they going to put that 2.5 to 3 hours? Oh, they're not. It is a double length. That's
yes. I got a little bit more time on it because even with my word count, you know, they like you to be like within 5% of your word count or less. And to accomplish everything I was trying to accomplish, I pushed the very envelope of that 5%, let me just say. So, but anyway, so I'm excited just for that. I think I can't wait for that part. But there are other things I'm excited about as well, but that's what I'm mostly excited.
Yeah. One thing I'm going to go back and read is the Aslanti Star Empire changes because I'm curious to know about, like, because I know there was a little talk about what kind of stuff would happen when, even back when I was working on Starfinder, and what to do with the baddies, the big baddies, and how to make them bigger and better.
The new war, right, between the Aslanti Empire and the Viscarium.
The Viscarium, yeah.
That's like exciting. That's two really, really warlike societies going to war. That's going to be a massive war. So. I think that'll be pretty exciting. Yeah, so lots of cool adventures here. You know, they have Jason, you were talking initially before we started recording about the backgrounds that are included as well.
Yeah, there are pages and pages of backgrounds. A good, you know, 6 to 8 per each of these sort of categories that we've been talking about. And there's like one of, I don't know, there's like a, how many categories are there? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Like seven of them. So that we're looking at like, as you said, eight pages of backgrounds. So many backgrounds. And so, you know, you can, you're not meant to use all. It is a lot, but you're not meant to use all of these at once, not to like throw them all at your players at the beginning of any Starfinder campaign. You pick a section, you attack these onto the ones that are in player core, I guess, and just be like, oh, you just do that because narrow it down. But it gives you a little more extra if you're not doing a specific adventure path, which has its, might have its own backgrounds as well, right? You just sort of.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, cool. Adventure paths have the player's guide with suggested backgrounds. So if you were doing a specific type of adventure, you could say, hey, you can pick any background, but these ones would really fit in this type of adventure that we're running.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't, but I mean, I was looking at the same thing. I'm like, if somebody were to tell me, oh, I'm going to be running a war, one of these war-torn campaigns, if you look outside of it, you're going to be, oh, war-torn, huh? I want to be the fashionista background. No, that kind of doesn't fit.
Can I be the busker? You see this guy, this Kasatha playing a street saxophone? It's hilarious. He's got this to his mask. It's hilarious.
Okay, now I got to look this up.
It's page 101.
The horror.
He also
background.
Kind of has a vaguely like.
Can we share this?
Yeah.
He's got a vaguely kind of Callistocrat outfit in a way too, with the white and gold. But he is in gloved hands. But he is just busking away.
Yeah, the busker. It's in the ports of call. Back. Well, that makes sense, right? Yeah. He's just hanging out at the docking bay when people are coming in. Yeah. So.
can we talk ancestries? I took a look at these. One of the things that struck me about what are technically the first ancestries, first six ancestries for Starfinder Second Edition, because our core rulebook isn't out yet. A third of them, two of the six, are large, which is something that Pathfinder has avoided.
So. Yeah, but it took a while for Pathfinder to get to large ancestries. Mainly for the sort of like, what does that mean? And, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, now that sort of dam has been opened, Starfinder is feel free to do all the sizes because Starfinder had all these sizes from the beginning as well. You know, the first edition did.
Well, and I think, so one of the things you have to worry about if you have a heavy melee combat type of system is the reach that gets afforded by a large creature. In Starfinder 2nd Edition, so much of the combat is ranged combat that I don't think that little extra affects you as much.
Well, that's the reason that I think 1st Edition kind of let people go wild with the sizes there and be like, because, it's meant to be guns and whatever more than anything. And I think now... Correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't necessarily automatically get a 10-foot reach if you're large. You have to have
probably not
things. It's not that, we just sort of said, you're large, good for you. You're just big. Take up more space on the battlefield. And that's not because
one of the Dragonkin heritages, as you might expect, is you're not large, you're medium. And then bonuses. And one of the Sarcissian heritages, because I looked into both of this when they were large. I'm like, well, how do they do that? Yeah. Or the Sarcissian, the compact Sarcissian, they can fit through stuff as though they were medium. They're not actually medium, but they can fit through stuff as though they were more compact. I thought that was an interesting way of, okay, we'll give you this large ancestry. But if you don't love that, if you worry that that might be a detriment, here is a way you get all the stuff from that ancestry, but you're going to be the same size as your medium sort of comrades.
Yeah. I mean, we did that with Minotaur. We did that with Centaur, you know, just so it becomes a sort of a given heritage that you want to be like, I'll just be a medium one just because people, like you said, people might not actually want to be large, but they still want to play a dragonkin or a Minotaur or whatever.
Well, what's interesting, you know, you mentioned in first edition automatically getting reach if you're large. Uplifted bears actually were large creatures that didn't automatically get reach.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I guess because they have T-Rex arms. I don't know.
They do not. You need to give more respect to the uplifted bears as someone who played an uplifted bear for a very short period of time.
Oh, I I love my uplifted bears. Don't get me wrong. So
everyone does.
Yeah. So yeah, the other thing I thought was interesting is that the Starfinder core rules, the playtest, has most, you know, kind of pretty standard ancestries. I mean, it has the Barathru in there. That's a little wild. I mean, the Astrozoan, the Contemplative, the Kalo, Sarzesian, these are all really weird, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's neat that they're getting right to weird right off the bat.
Well, okay. In my opinion, the Astrozoan is gross. Not necessarily, it's weird, but also gross.
Okay.
Like these, like the way that they've illustrated the like, you never actually see, like, oh, the Astrozoan, how does it, it's a weird starfish thing and it changes shape, and you never actually like get an idea of what it looked like, what that looked like. Galaxy Guy gives you pictures of this happening, and OMG, it is something else.
Yes, yes, it is. It's a lot grosser looking than
nightmare fuel.
Yeah. And I like that it shows the transition with the what's the laser fox called again?
Tashtari.
Tashtari, yeah. The transition to that laser wolf. That is just wild.
It's just like he's bursting. It's Cronenbergian a bit. I love every bit of it.
I love that. Could we map them for the different types of campaigns they have in there? Instead of putting all of the ancestries at the back, could Astrozoans live in the horror adventures? Could Contemplative live in the weird or the high tech, maybe? I don't know. Maybe they could have doubled down on the campaign types.
It's just that they don't, there's not, the numbers don't match, but basically it seems that way, right? Like they did a little bit of like that, like, oh, horror, Contemplative might be, you know, like you said, weird, Dragonkin's the fantasy-ish one.
Yep.
Hollow, I'm not sure. Vlaka, I think, ends up being
War-torn?
War-torn, I think they are War-torn.
I may say War-torn for them, yeah.
Sarcesian would be kind of like the into the unknown.
Into the unknown,
also weird. And then, I don't know, are Kalos dystopian? Do they have a dystopian water moon? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I don't think so.
They're certainly,
I was thinking they're more ports of call.
Then you put them in that whole other chapter. Yep.
Yeah, just flop them there. That's good.
So kind of one thing that we haven't touched on was the factions that they talk about, which the factions by themselves are...
Can we take a minute to go back? Because something I didn't want to mention that I thought was hilarious is the way that they did the Contemplative, which has been a sort of always been a weird one, like you said, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing is that they... I don't know if it's explained here, but they have hover after their land speed, which is something that's going to need to be explained, but I know what it means, but basically, yeah, you probably could guess what it means, right? You don't actually touch the ground when you walk. You just kind of hover it.
So they don't have to support their whole brain with those tiny legs.
No, they don't, because they're atrophied, and they've always been atrophied, and it's been weird. Like, how do they do it? You know, like, oh, they're terrible. If you hold something heavy, you're clumsy. That's great. But then there's the heritage, which is basically like, oh, you did not skip leg day. You actually have a normal body. retrograde, right? You don't atrophy and you get 10 hit points instead of 6. Like, it's like, oh, the buff brain guy. Yes, let's play that character.
And then if I could do one more thing before I leave, the Indiana Jones Dragonkin. Did you catch that? Did you catch that picture or the kind of the pilot-y looking one on page 151 there is sort of a...
Oh, yes. That jacket is so good.
Is very much a...
It's a bomber's jacket.
Bomber jacket and pants with
got the goggles on. He is ready to fly a SUP with camo.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Except with huge wings,
Yeah, he squeezes in there.
That's right. Don't worry about getting shot down. Shit, getting this guy shot down out of the sky. He'll just fly away from a...
No parachute needed.
Oh, that's right.
No parachute needed. And we give them full fly speed. Great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just want to talk kind of briefly about the factions. You know, they had these kind of groups before in Starfinder First Edition. What I like about them is that before... they had archetypes for Hell Knights and I think the Skyfire Knights of Glorian. That's who they had.
Starfinder Society archetypes.
Right. They had archetypes before. Now they have archetypes like for all the factions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the main ones.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. You know, it was a
Xenodruid
option, you know, to do things. Yeah, I never really played a different archetype. I've seen them played before.
Yeah, and they don't the thing about the archetypes that carries through from Starfinder First Edition, even though the rule didn't, is alignment. Right? When you look at them, they all do different things from the no longer existing alignment, right? Abadar Corp is very lawful neutral, and the Hell Knights are sort of very lawful evilish, whereas the Free Captains are very sort of chaotic neutralish, right?
Right.
Even if you're not using alignments, the fact that you're choosing, oh, I want to be a member of the Knights of Galarian faction, says something about sort of the moral compass of your character.
Right. Oh, sure, yeah. Right. Each of these factions does come with anathema and edicts mm-hmm. and anathema mm-hmm. for right. you to like put right. on your character. You're going to be like, oh, I'm a free captain. I will never betray my crew.
Right,
and that just helps you figure out what your character could be, you know, what kind of personality. Right.
So, but yeah, it's for a campaign book that comes out before the core book. This is just packed full of player options.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's just adventure ideas and player options. It's like they want to make sure as soon as that core book gets in your hands, you have all kinds of things that you can just jump into, character ideas and adventure ideas. Boom, you can just go.
Yeah, this could have been an extra 178 pages in a core rulebook. I think that would have made the core book too unwieldy, but all this stuff is going to play right into it very well. So,
yeah, I'm excited. I think, I'm excited. This makes me excited for the core book to come out.
Yeah.
So, which I think is what it's designed to do.
Maybe I'll also just bring this with me when I go to Gen Con and read. So I have something else to read after I read through the whole core rule book.
Do you find yourself with a whole lot of time to read and nothing to read at Gen Con? Because I get a sense that you're then doing Gen Con wrong, Jason.
I am going to be on the floor and then not on the floor anymore. I'm back to my hotel room every night. So I'm going home a few days beforehand, and I know that I'm going to have some time.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to have some long flights.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah.
All right. So Ron and I are going. We may or may not see you at Gen Con. Is that what you're saying?
You'll see me if you come to the booth.
We'll come to the booth, yes.
We'll come to the booth.
We can I'm going to have to get food at some point, so we can.
All right. Okay. So you're not just going to hide out in your room. We can go outside, get a nice food truck. I hear there's two lumpia food trucks there. I did not know that. Two food trucks that serve lumpia at Gen Con.
What's a lumpia?
It's a Filipino egg roll that is really delicious.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I look forward to that.
Not one, but two. Yep. I understand that event registration is open, or at least you can sort of nominate the things you want. And I have not even looked at that, and I ought to.
Yeah, I know. I haven't either. I am doing a seminar as well. I think it's on... I think it's on Saturday. I have a seminar. You know, in my presenting podcast, I interviewed 100 people in the gaming industry.
Okay.
And I asked them how they got started to kind of on their journey to get there. And I asked them advice they had for people who wanted to get interested in the industry. And so now I'm kind of distilling that all down to share with whoever wants to hear it at Gen Con.
So, and that's your seminar?
That's my seminar.
Do you need a heckler? Because I can show up, get a load of this guy.
Yes, yes. And I can point to you as somebody, this guy was in an interview, and this is the bad stuff he said.
So. Don't listen to him.
No, listen to him.
Ron did it. Yeah. the good way. I kind of stumbled head first into this whole thing.
Yeah, but that's the interesting. That's what makes the interviews interesting, is that across all these people, there are so many different ways that people got in.
Yeah,
sure. But their advice is actually a relatively small set now.
So, well, you can't. There's certain things you can't plan on doing.
Right.
You can't just be like, accidentally do a thing, you know.
Right.
Like,
no,
obviously. So, but it's interesting. Anyway.
If you want to do it, you got to, really.
So there, I might have one or two people there. I might have nobody. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing. So.
Well, if you need somebody there going, get a load of this guy, I'm happy to be the heckler in the audience.
I want to mention this again later, closer to, since event registration is open. I don't know. There's a plan. There's some special events, a special event that's happening in the Sagamore that's not necessarily, that isn't. It definitely isn't a society scenario happening that I am going to try to be part of at least once.
Can you say anything about it while I have a pen and a piece of paper to...
Gotta be up on here, right? It's hold on, let me look it up real quick and make sure it is.
Oh,
and do you need a heckler at it?
Yeah, no, I don't need a heckler at it. I don't know because I don't know when it is going to be, and it might not even be completely sold out at this point. But there is a special event called the Battle of Hell Knight Hill that is happening sort of multiple times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it's only happening once. But anyway, I would like to, I'm gonna try my darndest to at least be running one of those.
Oh, sweet.
Oh.
Yeah. And of course, I say that now. Also,
now it's on my list.
But I don't know which
I will be
win.
Running my adventure there for sure.
There you go.
It's going to be Thursday is when that special is going. So it's Thursday night.
I have a lot of confidence in whoever took that to develop it, making an already awesome adventure even awesomer. So that'll totally be worth doing.
Me too. I mean, I look forward to seeing how much awesomer it got. So. I'm sure it is. So, all right. Yeah. Well, this is another bit of excitement. What are we going to talk about next time? We have anything?
I don't know. Do we have anything?
I don't know. My new chicks are getting bigger, but.
Oh,
chicken report.
Chicken update.
Yep.
Yeah. I'll have to get an updated picture to post.
All right.
For the chicken report. That'll be good. All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.